What is it that makes the Sabbath different from other days? Did you ever notice how different it feels when it's holy time? How everything slows down. It gets quiet outside, and all is peaceful. And it's like the whole world just grinds to a halt. If only. In this world, that really isn't the case. But how about in your world? How about in your mind? How is this day different from the other six? The spring holy days will soon be here, just a few weeks away now. How are they different? It's always an exciting time when the spring holy days come around. The weather starts to change. It starts to get nice outside. And God created it to be a beautiful time. And he did that for a reason. We see the trees start to bloom. We see the flowers popping up out of the ground. God created all this beauty around that time of the year to make it special. Make these spring holy days extra special. Because these days are special. God has ordained certain days to be holy time. What exactly is holy time? The word holy is translated from the Hebrew word kodesh, which means a sacred place or thing. What is an example of something that is holy? Psalms chapter 99, verse 9. Psalms 99, verse 9. It says, "Exalt the Lord our God, and worship at his holy hill, for the Lord our God is holy." God defines holiness. Holiness implies without spot or blemish. Perfect or clean or immaculate. In the Old Testament, we see that offerings were made that were to be without blemish. These offerings represented Jesus Christ, who came and suffered and died for us without blemish. You see, God, who is holy, can neither tolerate nor can he coexist with sin. He cannot be in the presence of sin. He can, however, forgive sin when there is repentance. So God does forgive sin, but he will not be found where unforgiven sin is present. In Exodus chapter 3, verse 5. Exodus chapter 3, verse 5. We see a story about Moses here. This is the time before he led the children of Israel out of Egypt. God appeared to Moses. He appeared before him, and this is what he said in verse 5. Then he said, "Do not draw near this place. Take your sandals off your feet, for the place where you stand is holy ground." Holy ground. What made this place holy? God told Moses, "Take your sandals off. This is holy ground." What was holy about it? God's presence was there. God was there at this location. That made the place holy. Now, when something is holy, it must not be defiled in any way. God does not allow anything that is holy to be defiled. Wherever God is becomes a holy place, and it's not to be defiled. One of the places where God is in those in whom he places his Spirit. His Spirit is in us. He gives us his Holy Spirit. Notice 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 16. 1 Corinthians 3, verse 16. It says, "Do you not know that you are the temple of God, and that the Spirit of God dwells in you? If anyone defiles the temple of God, God will destroy him. For the temple of God is holy, which temple you are." We are God's temple. That's what makes us holy. And that is why we must avoid whatever defiles. That's one of the reasons we avoid unclean meat, because it will defile us. It will defile us spiritually before God. Well, God sanctifies or sets apart as he sees fit. Let's go ahead a few chapters to 1 Corinthians 7, verse 14, and see an example of this. And I know you're all familiar with this scripture. It says in 1 Corinthians 7, verse 14, "For the unbelieving husband is sanctified by the wife, and the unbelieving wife is sanctified by the husband. Otherwise, your children would be unclean, but now they are holy." God grants something special to those who are faithful to him. He extends sanctification to the family members of someone who is holy, so someone who has his spirit, where even an unconverted spouse is considered sanctified, where the children are considered sanctified or holy. Our children and our unconverted spouses are therefore set apart by God, and that's a special blessing. God instituted the Sabbath, not by doing something, but by not doing something. He ceased from his work. In Genesis chapter 2, verse 2 and 3, let's read the passage where holy time was initially created. Genesis 2, verse 2. It says, "On the seventh day, God ended his work, which he had done. And he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had done. Then God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because in it he rested from all his work which God had created and made." He blessed it and sanctified it. Now, when God blesses something, what he is doing is he is granting special favor upon it. Notice in the previous chapter, Genesis 1, verse 28, God blessed mankind. He pronounced a special favor upon man. Genesis 1, 28 says, "Then God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it, have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves on the earth." God blessed man, granting him special favor, giving him the ability to multiply and fill the earth and replenish it, giving him dominion over all animal life on the face of the earth. He blessed him with that favor. Well, he also blessed the Sabbath, placing special favor upon it. In other words, he favors that day. The Sabbath is his favorite day. Is a day that is special to him. God's presence is in that day, in that 24-hour period, and he is near during that time. So God blessed the seventh day, and he also sanctified the seventh day. He sanctified it, setting it apart for holy use. The Sabbath, therefore, is holy time. You see, not all days were created equal. The Sabbath has been made a day on which we can put our physical cares aside. Now, when God created man, he knew that we had limitations. He knew that we were physical, that we had physical bodies, and that we would be working, we would be performing tasks. He didn't design our bodies to work nonstop. He did not design the body to work 24/7. He knew that we had limitations, that our bodies would need a break. our bodies would need a chance to refresh. But our spirit also needs a break from all of the physical thoughts that go through our head, the thoughts of our daily life. And so our spirit and our mind needs a break as well. We need to have that relaxing time, that pause at the end of the week. On this particular day, on the Sabbath day, which has been blessed and sanctified by God, we have more opportunity to reconnect with Him. And we need that. We need that connection with Him, because without it, our relationship with God would end. If we don't keep in constant contact with Him, keep that avenue of communication open, then we would drift away very quickly. We would ultimately sever that connection. And so we want to make sure that relationship is maintained. And so He gives us the Sabbath for that reason. Jesus Christ said the Sabbath was made for man, and that is true in so many different ways. It's true in a physical sense. It's true in a spiritual sense. There are many benefits to keeping the Sabbath, because God did ordain it to be holy time. Well, how should one spend holy time? What should holy time mean to us, and how should we spend it? What are the things that we need to concentrate on during this period of time? Let's go back to Exodus 20, verse 8. We'll read the initial commandment as it was given to Moses in the Ten Commandments. Exodus 20, verse 8. It says, "Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy." The Sabbath already is holy. We're instructed to keep it that way. Keep it holy. We're also instructed here to remember it. Why is He telling us to remember it? Well, because we can get so wrapped up in our daily lives, the other 6 days of the week, that we can forget. We can forget what day it is. It's very easy to just forget. And all of a sudden, the Sabbath sneaks up on us because we didn't remember it. It was instituted as holy time, and we are to keep it that way. We're instructed to keep it holy. It already was holy since day seven when it was initially created and when it was instituted, and we are instructed to keep it that way. Now in Exodus 31, verse 14 and 15, we see a little bit more detail of what God says. Exodus 31, verse 14 and 15. It says, "You shall keep the Sabbath, therefore, for it is holy to you. Everyone who profanes it shall surely be put to death. For whoever does any work on it, that person shall be cut off from among his people. Work shall be done for 6 days, but the seventh is the Sabbath of rest, holy to the Lord. Whoever does any work on the Sabbath day, he shall surely be put to death." Sounds pretty serious, doesn't it? Sounds like God means business when it comes to keeping the Sabbath holy. In chapter 35, verse 2, another reference to this time being holy time. Exodus 35, verse 2. It says, "Work shall be done for 6 days, but the seventh day shall be a holy day for you, a Sabbath rest to the Lord. Whoever does any work on it shall be put to death. It is a day that is holy to God and should be holy to us as well." And we keep it holy by refraining from our work on that day. What is our work? What are we talking about when we say refrain from work? Generally refers to what we do for a living, our job, our career. We put that aside for that day. By extension, it also includes any other physical work or labor, mowing the lawn, washing the car, the tasks that you have to perform around the house to maintain a household, things that are considered work. There's a little bit more to it than just your job. Generally, anything that is work, anything that is labor, we put aside on that day. But there's more to keeping this day holy than just resting from work. Let's go to Leviticus 23, verse 3. There's something else that makes this day holy. Leviticus 23, verse 3. 6 days shall work be done, but the seventh day is a Sabbath of solemn rest, a holy convocation. It is a holy convocation. You shall do no work on it. It is the Sabbath of the Lord in all your dwellings. So we see that this day is also called a holy convocation. The word convocation is translated from the Hebrew word mikra, which means meeting, an assembly, a gathering, like this, an assembly, a holy convocation, a day that God's people are commanded to assemble before Him. So we keep this day holy, number one, by refraining from work, and number two, by assembling before God. We keep the day holy by bringing God, who is holy, into it, bringing Him into our lives, by bringing ourselves near to Him. Well, the annual festivals were designated as holy time as well. And as we read the very next verse, verse 4 in Leviticus 23, it says, "These are the feasts of the Lord, holy convocations, which you shall proclaim at their appointed times." So you see that the annual festivals are holy convocations as well. These days are days that God has ordained to be holy time also. These days are called feast days. And the word feast is just another word for appointment. If you look at the root meaning of feast, the Hebrew word is moed. And it means an appointment. You have an appointment with God to be here on His holy day. These are days that God commands us to observe. He has set apart 19 days out of the year to be feasts, feast days. And 7 of those feast days are holy days, holy convocations. They're all appointments that we have on our calendar. And God expects us to keep our appointments and to observe all of them. We're to assemble before Him on all the holy convocations that He has called. And again, also refrain from our work on these 7 holy days, the 7 holy convocations. We call these days annual Sabbaths because they are rest days. The word Sabbath means rest. And they are rest days. They are annual Sabbaths. 12 of the feast days during the year are not holy days. They're observed as feast days but are not rest days. We're talking about the Passover, the middle 5 days, the middle 5 days of unleavened bread, and the last 6 days during the Feast of Tabernacles. They're part of God's feast, but they're not holy days. But of course, the first and last day of unleavened bread, Pentecost, Trumpets, Atonement, first day of Feast of Tabernacles and last great day are the 7 holy days. Now, observing the Sabbath and the holy days is more than a physical exercise. We should be in a different state of mind, a different mindset on God's Sabbath. There should be a totally different way of thinking. And this is one thing we have to learn and understand, that our mind changes. Our mind should be at rest from our normal daily cycles, our normal daily cares and pursuits. We need to clear our mind of thoughts about our physical pursuits and our physical goals and the things that we're doing in our life physically, the secular things that we're involved with during the week. We clear our mind of these things on this day. We don't think about the bills that need to be paid. Now, we take care of that on the other days. But on the Sabbath, we clear that out of our mind. And sometimes that's a good thing because sometimes bills can get overwhelming. And we start to think about, you know, how am I going to pay this one? And how am I going to arrange it? When am I going to pay that? And it takes a little thought and effort sometimes to figure it all out. But on this day, your mind gets a break from that. Your mind doesn't have to think about that on this day. You put it aside. Household tasks, things that need doing around the house, chores that need to be done. You put that out of your mind for this one day. Business dealings that you might have. Checking in on your investments, your 401k, and things like that. You don't do that on this day. You don't think about it. You put that out of your mind. You don't have to worry about these physical things. It is a day of rest for the body and for the mind. Now, we not only need a physical break, but we need to declutter the mind from time to time. We get so many things running through our minds that sometimes we just have to clear it out, declutter it, and focus our attention on something else. So on this day of the week, we focus our attention on God. We focus our attention on the calling that He's given us and on His way of life. On God's Sabbath, we have more time to spend with Him. We have more time to study. We have more time to look into His Word, more time to speak with Him, and more time to let Him speak with us. We have the opportunity to just relax and enjoy the creation that He's put around us, to enjoy the natural beauty that is all around us all the time. During the week, we're sometimes too busy to notice. We have time on the Sabbath to look into these things and to take them in and to enjoy them. And it's for these reasons that we don't just want to crash into the Sabbath. We don't just want it to just all of a sudden be upon us. What I mean by that is, if sunset is at 5:38, which I think is where we are tonight, if sunset is at 5:38 on a Friday, don't wait until 5:37 to quit work. You know, that's what I call crashing into the Sabbath. When I was working in the office, you know, during certain times of the year, sunset got a little bit early. Our quitting time was 5 o'clock, and in a couple of months of the year, I would just take off work early on Friday so that I would be gone from there before the Sabbath. Now, I wouldn't wait until the minute of the beginning of the Sabbath. I wouldn't wait till the moment of sunset. Because sure as I did that, I'd be walking out of the building and somebody would come up to me and ask me a question or want to know something or where did you put this? I'm going to need it. I'm working tomorrow. I need to have it. And all the time I'm looking at my watch. I got 30 seconds left and I'm really rushed to get them taken care of before the Sabbath begins. You don't wait until the last minute. And I would usually quit about 20 or 30 minutes ahead of time, give myself time to leave the building, get my car, drive home, and just unwind and relax. It's best if you can let your body and your mind glide into the Sabbath and not just hit it like you're running into a brick wall. You have that time to wind down. That way, when the Sabbath begins, your mind and your body are already in Sabbath mode. You're already prepared to enter holy time. Because we don't want anything corrupt spilling over into holy time. We don't want any of the mundane pursuits of our daily life spilling over into holy time. Holy time must remain holy, with no worldly intrusion. Well, simply refraining from work really doesn't make the time holy. by taking off of work, by going home and not doing any work around the house for that 24-hour period, that doesn't really make the time holy of itself. This was the approach the Pharisees had. Let's go back to Matthew 23, verse 23. Matthew chapter 23, I'll read verse 23 through 28. It says, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you pay tithe of mint and anise and cumin, and have neglected the weightier matters of the law, justice and mercy and faith. These you ought to have done without leaving the others undone. Blind guides who strain out a gnat and swallow a camel. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you cleanse the outside of the cup and dish, but inside they are full of extortion and self-indulgence. Blind Pharisee, first cleanse the inside of the cup and dish, that the outside of them may be clean also. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you are like whitewashed tombs, which indeed appear beautiful outwardly, but inside are full of dead men's bones and all uncleanness. Even so, you also outwardly appear righteous to men, but inside you are full of hypocrisy and lawlessness." Keeping the Sabbath to them was just about physical appearance. They neglected the weightier matters of the law. They neglected the spiritual side. That's why they were called hypocrites. They neglected these things. We need to realize that there's more than just not working. See, the fellowship that we enjoy on this day is just as important. One benefit of keeping the Sabbath and attending the holy convocation is the contact we have with God's people. The opportunity that we have to come together with people of like mind and share experiences with them and become close to them and be like a family with them and help one another. In Hebrews chapter 10, verse 24, we see that meeting together on the Sabbath makes us closer to one another. Hebrews chapter 10, verse 24. "And let us consider one another in order to stir up love and good works." We're to be considering one another. We're to be mindful of the needs of each other, mindful of what trials others are going through. Because when one of us suffers, we all suffer. Because we're a family. We're connected. Meeting together on the Sabbath stirs up love and good works. And it makes us a family. We can edify one another in the context of iron sharpening iron. You know, we help each other. We help somebody else. They help us as far as our spiritual life is concerned. Let's continue in verse 25. "Not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as is the manner of some, but exhorting one another, and so much more as you see the day approaching." We're to be exhorting one another, edifying each other. Our conversation with each other can encourage, it can uplift, and it can even heal. That's right. Our conversation with one another, our closeness, the love that we share for one another can even have a healing effect. I'd like to read for you a prayer request that you haven't seen yet. It's not on this week's prayer request list because it just came out yesterday. But this message came through and it will probably show up on next week's list. But I'm going to read it to you now because it says exactly what I'm getting at. It says Kate Pillsbury of the Portsmouth, New Hampshire congregation, who had recently contracted Lyme disease in addition to other problems she's been battling, would like to thank everyone for the prayers, cards, and letters. The results of recent lab tests suggest that she should not have any further complication from the Lyme disease. Kate is relatively new to the church, and she wrote, "I had no idea the range of family members that there are in the world. I've received so many letters and cards, but especially prayers. I'm astonished at the quantity. I have never in my life had a loving reaction like this. Thank you, thank you, thank you." She noted that she was getting a lot of love from the rest of the family, even family members she hadn't met. But they were corresponding with her. They were sending her cards and letters and offering support during her trial. If support from afar does this, what can it do up close? What can it do when you're in the same room with the person? How can we affect one another, and how can we even have a healing effect on one another? By having this close contact, by having this feeling of family with one another, by edifying, encouraging, and uplifting each other when we come together during holy time. Our conversation with one another can edify, can help us all to grow, can help us be stronger spiritually. Of course, that depends on what our conversation on the Sabbath is about. Now, I'm not saying that every conversation you have with another church member on the Sabbath is going to edify. You might get together with someone and talk about, well, what has God done in your life? You talk about some of the experiences that you've had over the years, and how God has blessed you and brought you to this point in your life, how you came into the church. That's a popular topic a lot of times. Miracles that you've seen. I'm sure we've all at some time in our lives seen miracles take place, things that just don't have any other explanation. When we talk about these things with one another, we're edifying. We're helping each other spiritually. Sometimes our conversation on the Sabbath will turn to other things, like the Super Bowl. Did you see that guy catch that ball on the sideline? I sure thought he stepped out of bounds. It sure looked like, you know. And we might get into discussions like that sometimes. Or you might talk about the vacation you're planning or the vacation you just came back from. Or you might get together with people and start talking about things that you just plain are irritated by, things that irritate you. Maybe that's not a good topic for the Sabbath. Might not be a good topic anytime. Which conversations glorify God? Which conversations are the ones that are part of worship? I'm not saying that it's wrong to come in and talk about sports. I'm not saying that it's wrong to talk about things that are going on in your life or with your family or with some things that are happening at work or whatever. But these things should not dominate the conversation. That shouldn't be all you talk about. You know, we're here to glorify God, to worship Him, and to edify each other. And some discussions will edify and others will not. There are some discussions we probably should never have on the Sabbath, and those are the work-related ones, the things about our job, and maybe you work with somebody that's in the church and you get together and discuss projects that you're working on at work. You don't want to do that here. You know, this is the day to put that out of your mind. And if there's anything you don't want to talk about on the Sabbath, it's work, things that you're doing at work. I remember several years, quite a few years now, probably about the late 80s or so, this man in the church came up to me one day and Of course, knowing that I was in the engineering field, he came up to me one day because he was building something in his backyard, and he wanted a little advice. He came up to me and he said, "Can I ask you an engineering-related question?" It was right after church. And I looked at him and I said, "Sure you can. Just call me tonight after sunset and you can ask all the engineering-related questions you want." But I wasn't going to discuss it with him then, because that was my job. That was my profession. And I didn't want to discuss that. I want that out of my mind on this day. Now, if he'd have come up and asked me something about a different topic that is not part of my job, I might have answered him. I might have given him some advice. But that was my job. That was my career. And I'm not going to discuss that today. Now, Mr. Robinson here works in Home Depot. Somebody might ask him something about laying out some kitchen cabinets. He's probably not going to talk to you today about it. But if you want to ask him about something that was a part of my job, you know, he might answer that, because it's not his job, different type of work. And it's not his work, it's not his livelihood, not something he thinks about every other day of the week. But I wasn't going to answer an engineering question, because I did that all week long. And so he was just going to have to wait. He would have to call me after sunset. So we don't want to have those kind of discussions. Of course, all of this holds true not only for the weekly Sabbath, but for the annual Sabbath as well. There's one thing more. The holy days each have a specific meaning. The holy days tell God's plan. And we keep the holy days, the annual holy days, holy when we dwell on the aspect of that plan, when we have that on our minds, when we're concentrating on it, rehearsing the meaning of these things year after year, lest we forget them. And we do rehearse year after year, and sometimes we might get to thinking, well, we know what these days mean. Do we have to go through this again? We already know. We've been in the church for 30 years. We know what it's all about. Rehearsing the meaning year after year, lest we forget. And you will forget. You're probably saying, how could anyone ever forget the meaning of the holy days? How is it possible that a person could forget what these days picture? Just go up and ask anyone who's left the church and who doesn't keep these days anymore. Ask him, what do the holy days mean? They won't be able to tell you, because they've forgotten. Guarantee you, they've forgotten what the days mean. I know several people who were in the church at one time, and they ask me, now what is this day about again? When does this day occur? And, you know, questions like that, they just have totally forgotten. On these days, we should concentrate on their meaning. We should prepare for them ahead of time by dwelling on what the days mean. That way, when the days come, we can truly keep holy time. We can keep these days holy. Keeping them holy involves this extra step of concentrating on the meaning of the days. If we take these days casually, if we just go to services and come back, if we put out leavening for 7 days and don't really think about why, we're just going through motions. We're just going through the motions, and it has no meaning to us. We're not keeping it holy. But we need to really concentrate on and study what it's about and rehearse it every year. How important is holy time to you? God ordained this time to be holy. It's important to Him. How important is it to you? If we are to keep God's holy time holy, it must be important to us. It must be something that we look forward to more than anything else. Spending time with God on his day. It's much more important than a day at work. Much more important than what you do all week long. Now, I don't want anything interfering with holy time. I don't want anything interfering with the Sabbath or the holy days. Sometimes it's inevitable. Sometimes things happen. People get sick. People die and you have to go to a funeral. I know these things happen. Things do interfere occasionally. We want to make sure that we're healthy as we can be for the Sabbath, so we can be here. You know, if nothing else, make sure that you're healthy on the Sabbath, because that's a special day. Don't wear yourself down all week long so that when the Sabbath comes around, you're too tired to come to church. Don't ever let the events of the first 6 days keep you down on the seventh. It should be important to us that we be here at Sabbath services every single week. And I know that, as I said, sometimes things come up. You have illnesses, you have family emergencies, you have things that have to be addressed, and that these things might sometimes keep you away. You might miss occasionally. Just don't let it happen every week. You know, these things don't happen normally every week. They should be the exception, not the rule. We have a lot of people who want to start attending. We have people who would love to be able to come to church. I've gotten so many contacts from Norfolk, people who want to come to church. And I tell them, well, the closest church is in Richmond, and it's 2 hours away. And I hear this sigh, this just a total dejection, I guess it is. Just totally sorry to hear that it's so far away. I really want to go, but it's too far to go. We have people who live in places where they just can't make it because of the distance. And then we have people who will call up and say, I'd like to come to church. Where is it? And they find out that it's 15 miles down the road. Oh, is it that far? You know, you have that side too. But there are so many people who really want to be there. And we have people that do drive an hour and a half or almost 2 hours to come to church. We have people who drive a long way because it's important to be there. Isaiah 58, verse 13. Isaiah 58, verse 13. If you turn away your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy day of the Lord honorable, and shall honor him, not doing your own ways, not finding your own pleasure, not speaking your own words, then you shall delight yourself in the Lord. And I will cause you to ride on the high hills of the earth, and feed you with the heritage of Jacob your father. The mouth of the Lord has spoken. Is the Sabbath a delight to you? Is it the highlight of your week? It says that you should turn away your foot from doing your pleasure on my holy day. That doesn't mean that this should be a day without pleasure. That if something is pleasing or pleasurable in any way, that it's wrong. Doesn't mean that. Well, how can something be a delight if it isn't pleasurable? How can something be a delight if it's not pleasant? When it says turn away from doing your own pleasure, what it's talking about is turn away from doing whatever you please, whatever pleases you. If it's your own thing, doing your own thing, following your own pursuits, if you do whatever you please, then you need to reconsider, am I keeping this time holy? This is a day for you to glorify God in all that you do. I'm oftentimes puzzled why X number of people attend Sabbath services. And then after services, we might take a 20-minute break and have Bible study. And then we have an attendance at Bible study that's less than the number X, whatever X was. Our attendance seems to drop across that 20-minute period that, where we take a break after services before Bible study. Where's everyone going? Where do you have to be? This is holy time. What's more important than being here for holy time? Why do you not stay for Bible study? How diligent are you in observing God's holy days? I know most of us wouldn't miss being there for holy day services. I know that the majority of us would have no problem getting to the holy day, no matter what obstacles we faced. We would make sure we were there. These are special times of the year. Oftentimes, because we have combined services, we get together with people from other areas. And we see different people, people that we don't normally meet with. 4 times a year, the last day of unleavened bread, Pentecost, trumpets, and the last great day, we typically have 2 services. I'm puzzled as to why the afternoon attendance always seems to be less than the morning. Can't understand that. Where do you have to go? I don't know why some people don't stay for both services, why they skip out. What is so important that you have to be elsewhere? You have an appointment with God, and it's not proper to skip out. This is still holy time. Are you keeping all of it holy? I hope so, because we're commanded to be where His name is placed. And we want to make sure that we are keeping our appointment. I'm going to read Leviticus 23, verse 4 again. I read it earlier, but it's short. You can listen to it one more time. These are the feasts of the Lord, holy convocations which you shall proclaim at their appointed times. How many people decide, well, it's too far. It's too far to go. You know, we're having combined services way over there, and I live way over here, and it's just too far. And they stay home. Maybe they say, well, I can't afford the price of gas to drive. It's an extra hour, and I just can't afford the extra cost. Gasoline is so high now, it just costs too much. Let me talk about the price of gasoline for a minute. I know it's high. I know that the price of gas has gone up. But do you know how often that's used as an excuse for things? And I'm not just talking about attending church services. I'm talking about a lot of things. People use that. The price of gas is so high, I can't do it. Now, you know that I live down near Ocean City. And you know that in the summertime, a lot of people go from up here, Baltimore, Washington, Philadelphia, down to Ocean City. On any given weekend, I can go down to the highway right down from my house and watch the parade of cars going by. It's just a nonstop. Starts about the spring holy days, and it ends around feast time. This time of year, it's a breeze. There are times when if I want to turn left off the highway and traffic's coming out of Ocean City, I can't get across because I have to wait so long. I've heard it said that people aren't coming to Ocean City anymore because of the price of gas. Now let's think about that for a minute. The average person who, let's say, lives in the Baltimore area has maybe less than a 300-mile round trip to Ocean City. Maybe while they're there for the week, they're on vacation, they'll drive around another couple hundred miles. Say their whole trip is 500 miles. Let's assume that their car gets 25 miles a gallon. That means they're going to burn 20 gallons of gas on this trip, on their vacation. 20 gallons of gas. Let's assume, and I don't think it's this much, but let's assume that the price of gas has risen a dollar in the past year. One extra dollar per gallon, and you need 20 gallons. Your vacation is going to cost you $20 more. People are spending $1,000 to $1,500 on a week's vacation at the ocean, and they're going to let a $20 extra charge stop them? I mean, do the math yourself. It's silly. It's a ridiculous excuse. if you have to drive an extra hour to go to Holy Day services because it's combined with someone else and it's a little bit more, it's a little bit further away. You're driving an extra hour each way, so that's maybe 100 more miles. You get 25 miles a gallon. We're talking about 4 gallons of gas, $14 worth of an expense. Are you going to allow $14 to keep you from observing God's festival? Holy time. We're talking $14. Maybe it's a little more, a little less, depending on where you live. I have to get up too early, or I would get home too late. It's so far to drive. I know that when we meet in Annapolis for Pentecost, that some of the people who are in the Richmond Church and some of the people up in New Jersey do have a long way to go. But they do it. They do it. Because it's holy time. But I know that there are people who feel that they can't because they would have to stay overnight because they would be getting home too late and can't afford to stay overnight. You know, God's not going to buy that excuse. God is not going to buy it because he allowed for that scenario. Deuteronomy chapter 14, verse 22. Deuteronomy 14, verse 22, I'll read up to 25. You shall truly tithe all the increase of your grain that the field produces year by year, and you shall eat before the Lord your God in the place where he chooses to make his name abide. The tithe of your grain and your new wine and your oil, of the firstborn of your herds and your flocks, that you may learn to fear the Lord your God always. But if the journey is too long for you, so that you are not able to carry the tithe, or if the place where the Lord your God chooses to put his name is too far from you, when the Lord your God has blessed you, then you shall exchange it for money, take the money in your hand, and go to the place which the Lord your God chooses. Don't tell God it's too far. He's already told you what to do. He's already told you how you can afford it. We're commanded to keep a tithe for keeping the feast days. And this is not just for Feast of Tabernacles. This is for all the feast days. You can use your festival tithe for any of the feast days. And if you can't afford the feast days, maybe you're not tithing properly. Some don't keep the feast because they can't afford it. I know that. I know there are some people who don't attend the feast because they feel they can't afford it. Have they read Deuteronomy 14? Do they know about the festival tithe? You know, God finds these days, or considers these days to be important. Holy time. And he made this law, this tithing law, the law of the festival tithe, so that people could go, so that people would not have to stay home for such an important occasion, so that all could observe all of God's holy times. Now, it's understandable. I realize that there are some who really and truly cannot afford it. I understand that we are in a poor economy, that wages are down and prices are high. I know that there's a lot of unemployment, that some people might have been out of work for part of the year, maybe even all of the year. And I know that some are on a fixed income. Some depend only on Social Security for their income, and Social Security is not tithed on. I realize that. But you know what? God allowed for that too. Assistance is available for anyone who needs it. It's there. Verse 28. At the end of every third year, you shall bring out the tithe of your produce of that year and store it up within your gates. And the Levite, because he has no portion or inheritance with you, and the stranger and the fatherless and the widow who are within your gates, may come and eat and be satisfied, that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hand which you do. God made a way for those who truly are in need and don't have the funds, who don't have the income God allowed for that. He takes care of his people. And he instituted this method for making sure that everyone is able to have what they need. You see, that's how important his feasts are to him. And that's how important they should be to us. If there's a legitimate need, it's okay to ask for assistance. It's okay to ask the church to help, because that's what it's there for. Well, the bottom line is that God expects us to respect what he has called holy. And people always want to ask questions like, well, what is appropriate for the Sabbath? What's right and what's wrong? What can I do and what can't I do on the Sabbath? Don't look at the Sabbath as a day when you can't do certain things. That's negative. Look at it as a positive thing. Look at it as a day when there are so many things that you can do that you don't get to do the other days of the week. An age-old question that you hear a lot, is it okay to watch TV on the Sabbath? You've probably heard that one before. Is it okay to watch TV on the Sabbath? Well, I'm here to tell you that there's a lot of stuff that's on TV that's not appropriate any day. There's a lot of stuff that you probably want to avoid no matter what day it is. But there are those who will insist that no TV is appropriate on the Sabbath, and there will be some who say, well, it depends on the content. It depends on what you're watching. If you're watching the news, or if you want to check in on the Weather Channel and see what's happening outside, and if you want to watch some nature show or something like that, and you'll hear people give their opinions on what is okay and what is not okay as far as TV on the Sabbath. The question is, and this is what determines it, does it glorify God or does it separate you from it? Ask yourself that question about anything, not just television, but anything about the Sabbath. Does it glorify God or does it separate you from it? And that should clear it up. If it's something that you're not comfortable with doing on the Sabbath, then I suggest you not do it. You'd better not do it. Because if you believe it is sin, then to you it is sin if you do it. People will say, oh, is it okay to get in the pool and take a swim on the Sabbath? I've heard that one a lot too. Well, not if you consider that doing your own thing and doing whatever you please. These are all decisions that we all have to make. And we have to decide for ourselves whether something glorifies God or separates us from him. Don't come to me and ask for permission to do something. Don't ask me for permission to do so-and-so on the Sabbath. Is it right to do this? I'm not here to give you permission. I'm here to tell you what the Bible says. And then you determine if it fits that or not. I remember one time a man came up to me, probably about 10, 12, 14 years ago. I don't remember how long ago it was. He was a member of the VFW. And he was considering getting a commemorative license plate on his car with the VFW tags. And the tag had the emblem of the VFW on it. And in the emblem was a cross. And he was a little concerned because he didn't know if he wanted to put this tag on his car that had a cross on it. So he asked me about it. He said, what do you think of this? What do you think of having a tag with a cross on it? And I said, and he didn't live in Maryland, he was somewhere else. But I pointed out to him that the standard issue Maryland tags at that time had the little Maryland seal in the middle. And the Maryland seal itself has a cross in it. I said, everybody in Maryland is driving around with a tag that has a cross on it. I said, I don't think it's a big deal. My opinion is it really doesn't matter. That's not why you're putting it on your car, to display a cross. Well, right away he tells somebody else in the congregation that now he can get this tag because I gave him permission. I didn't give him permission. I gave him my opinion. I'm not here to give permission to anything. I'm not qualified to give permission for something. Whatever you do on the Sabbath day is between you and God, and just make sure that it glorifies God and it is in keeping with the theme of the day, keeping it holy. And that's for you to determine. what you need to do to glorify God in it. That's what determines what you do. The Sabbath and the holy days are holy, and they must be kept that way. Don't take these days casually. Don't ever take them for granted. Honor God in them, because these holy days, the weekly Sabbath and the annual Sabbath, are the days that He draws near to us. And that is an opportunity that we cannot afford to pass up.